Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts Live, broadcasting to you today from the 10th floor of the We Believe Tower in Midtown Atlanta, overlooking the majestic skyline of Buckhead, where it is finally summer. And we have had good weather up until now, but it is getting hot and oppressive, which is what you would expect from the Deep South. Here's something you might not expect. I was looking at the job approval numbers for President Obama today. Less than 6 months into his second term, the Real Clear Politics average has his disapproval rating at 49.5% with his approval rating at 45.3%. And the only number that isn't a negative one is from Pew Research, and that poll was taken on the 12th of June, a month ago. So, things are not looking good for President Obama, and a lot of that, I believe, has to do with what is happening in the Middle East, and we've got some very interesting things happening. I've got a special guest that we've had before, a friend of mine that I grew up with. Rich, are you on the phone?
I am, Jack, yes.
Well, we didn't win the Stanley Cup, but the Red Sox are doing pretty well, so we're definitely in the ballpark for some of the fun things that happen with Aaron Hernandez in jail for murder, as he should be. The Patriots look a little wobbly, but, you know, c'est la vie. Things are happening. But what I want to talk about, obviously, is what is going on in Egypt and Syria, in Iran, the conflict between the Sunnis and the Shiites, and how all of this is impacting Israel. And before I kind of give you the floor here a little bit, I want to just mention something, and this is just because of the audience that I have. There is a growing anti-Semitic sentiment throughout Europe based upon the influx of militant Muslims. I read an article yesterday, I believe, and I think you sent it to me.
That's
that
right.
Said that the last Jews are leaving Norway, and that there will be no more in the next several months. The entire nation, what Hitler couldn't even finish doing, the Muslims are doing now. Some very sad times. Also, there is a increase of pro-Palestinian sentiment in the institutionalized moderate Christian world, which would be Methodist, Presbyterians that aren't from the PCA, United Church of Christ, and a few others like that. That's the bad news. The good news is those are dying denominations and nobody goes to them anyway because they don't preach the gospel, they don't preach the truth, and they do not, the kind of men and women that go there are sedentary, stale, and dull, and without much influence. But those in the evangelical world are pretty strong, and we are firmly committed, as firmly committed to the survival of Israel as Jews in America and as Israelis themselves. We are flat out there, and we aren't wimps. Go ahead, my friend.
So how are you, Jack? Nice to hear your voice, and it's a great opportunity you're affording me. You know, where I live, I don't have a chance to espouse my views that often because I'm in sort of a liberal bastion And people aren't very receptive to what I have to say when it comes to basically Islam. You know, a lot of people have a view of Islam which is way too favorable, and they can't seem to look over the pond to see what's happening in Europe as a prototype of what is going to happen in this country. Or if it doesn't happen, we have the fear that Europe is going to pull us into some serious problems. I mean, the Middle East is one theater, and the Middle East is very complicated. You mentioned the tribes. To tell you the truth, Jack, I don't really have the knowledge of the various tribes. It's almost like Croatia and Bosnia and Serbia. I think I got lost in that conflict because it's so complicated. But I do look at Islam as the overreaching problem. You mentioned Europe, and you talk about militant Muslims. A lot of people would take offense to the term a militant Muslim, as if you're typing all Muslims as being dangerous. But just like in Germany, there were good Germans, but we lost 6 million Jews and many others at the hands of the bad Germans. So that I take
almost 100 million people died in World War II, and most of them died in Europe as a result of the Nazis having control of the state machinery. Now, you know, I don't care how many moderate Muslims there are. If they aren't willing to stand up and be counted, then what good are they? But at the same time, it looks to me now, and you know, we're just talking about this, so I don't know for sure, but it looks to me like the Egyptians have been just as tired as they can possibly be of this, baby put on a burqa stuff, and they've lived a very, very, very good life since the peace accord with Jimmy Carter in the 70s, and as a result, you know, they don't want to get pulled into some of this stuff, and they've revolted. I mean, you know, a demonstration of 33 million people, I'd say that's a pretty popular uprising, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but I'm not quite sure whether or not what we saw on the streets in Egypt, recently, this revolution, the new revolution within a period of 2 years, I wouldn't romanticize that. There were still, I understand, 6 women who were raped during that period of time in Tahrir Square, so that I wouldn't be so fast to try to look at this as a good thing. Carolyn Glick, who's an authority and Israeli editorial writer, who my favorite, she's written a lot about what is happening in Egypt right now is not necessarily better than, you know, the Morsi government. Not that the Morsi government was any good, but I wouldn't feel relieved. She doesn't feel relieved because Egypt is an impoverished country. They can't feed themselves. There's no foreign investment. It's a very troubled country. So it's going to be in a state of conflict for a long, long time. And it's had a huge population. The population growth in Egypt is phenomenal.
There are like 85 million people, and I think that there are more people in Cairo than New York City.
Yeah, the instability of the country is beyond. You see, America can't save the world. It can't do that. All the best intentions. And my biggest fear is with the instability in Egypt, in Syria, what we see is this very troubling preoccupation of Kerry barnstorming back and forth to Israel, putting pressure on Israel to make more concessions to the Palestinians. when Israel is the only peaceful country in the Middle East. It's shameful.
Yeah.
It's shameful. It's the only way the administration thinks they're going to score any points, because really the problems of the Middle East are beyond solving, at least on the part by the United. They have to be solved over a long period of time. There's going to be enormous amount of death and destruction there, and containment is the only thing. Containment for the sake of our own security, the security of the West. I don't see any way, when you have the kind of fervor, the out-of-control religious fervor that preys on the foolishness of a religion that claims that everybody else is inferior. I mean, it's a sickening reality that most people that I talk to don't comprehend it. They don't want it. It's beyond them. They don't understand the evil. And with a president that refuses to acknowledge, and you know that he, it was under his order that the frame is the term Islamic militant was taken out of all the protocols of the CIA, all the government protocols. You can't talk about Islamic militancy. So when you can't identify the enemy, you end up fighting fighting yourself. And let me give you an example of this. I want to relate a story to you and your listeners that, to me, is like it is so insidious in its stupidity that I can't even get it out of my mind. I was having lunch the other day with my aging mother, who's almost 94, and she has a friend who's younger. She's in her 60s. And this woman is very liberal. She just got back from Turkey. And I said to her, Marjorie, I heard you got back from Turkey. How was Turkey? She says, oh, it was wonderful. The scenery was breathtaking. The people were warm and friendly. I said to her, well, that's really nice. I'm glad you had such a good time. Well, what was it like visiting a country that treats women like second-class citizens? She said to me, oh, Richard, you're right. Oh, in the city, you don't see any women at all. There are no women on the streets. You have to go way out in the countryside, and you see women working in the fields. That's the only time you see women. I said, you know, Marjorie, I'm very sympathetic with the plight of women, you know, when it comes to Islam. But I really, you know, my greatest fear is suicide bombers and how they are celebrated in Islamic countries when they go out and kill innocent people. This is what concerns me, this kind of blind hatred. Now, this woman, she paused. You could see her brain going through all these contortions, because I'm talking about real life, real danger. I'm putting a black mark on something that she feels so good about, being in Turkey and traveling around. And she says to me, you know, the Jews do it too. Now, this is a Jewish woman. I said, what are you talking about? The Jews don't blow themselves up on buses and killing innocent people. She says, oh, but they do, in a sense. What about Masada? Now, you know Masada.
So she went back to 300, to 80 AD or whatever, 300.
Right.
I mean, back to the first millennium?
Right. She went back there when Jews committed suicide en masse. They didn't kill anybody else. They killed themselves rather than being captured and tortured and put under the reign of the Babylonians or whoever it was, the Romans. Doesn't make any difference.
It was the Romans. And I think it was like, boy, you know, 80 AD or something like that was Masada. I don't know absolutely for sure.
Can you imagine that leap, Jack? Can you imagine somebody leaping from modern-day suicide bombers on buses in Jerusalem or in Afghanistan or in, you name a country that has Muslims, that where they drive up the checkpoints and blow themselves up? And somebody could make a leap, a Jewish woman can make a leap to compare that in some way to Jews committing suicide because they were surrounded for years trying to survive as best they could in an impossible situation. This kind of contortion.
You know, Richard, I have Christian friends, and this has happened repeatedly, where they make a comparison to the Spanish Inquisition.
Uh-huh.
Now, the Spanish Inquisition happened right about the time that Columbus discovered the New World.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking, you know, the 15th century, and here we are in the 21st century, as a comparison for what they're doing to kind of like we're no better than they are.
Right.
And it seems like it's such a stretch, but it happens repeatedly, and it's because they don't want there's nothing in them psychologically that can say, I'm wrong. I've made a mistake. This isn't the way it should be. This isn't correct. I am wrong. I need to rethink this. There's that gene in them is missing.
Well, this is a very interesting area of thought, you know, denying reality. You know, why do so many people have the inability to acknowledge the danger of radical Islam or Islam in general when they see what's happening around the world? Well, why is that? And I think it has to do with fashion. When, you know, the fashion is like where women will go out and buy these absurd shoes that are uncomfortable. Men don't find them attractive. They can't walk in them, but it's the fashion. Makes no sense, but it's the fashion. I think that liberals and many Democrats embrace the enemy in a way because it makes them feel good. They're somewhat uncomfortable with their own success, their own comfort. In order to prove that they're better people and feel good about themselves when the world isn't, you know, there are so many people less off, they embrace people just for sheer because of their economics. They look at Israel, it's successful. They say, well, they're successful, and the Arabs are not. We got to make everybody equal. Not they,
yeah.
not my backyard syndrome. They want everybody to be equal. It makes them feel good as a Democrat. That's what democracy is. Everybody's equal. It's socialism. It's communism.
Unfortunately, it goes to the lowest common denominator, not pulling people up by doing the things that made America great. What you had said something just a minute earlier that I wanted to make a reference to. You were talking about Barack Obama took out jihad, Muslim militants, a half a dozen different things,
right.
War on terror, all of these things out of the protocol of the CIA and all of the rest of them because they were politically incorrect and against the worldview that they embraced so emphatically. And on the other hand, they have increased the spying upon us and upon others exponentially because of that very fact, saying, well, we have to do this because terror is so great. They won't even call it terror, but because it's so real, they have to spy that much more. It seems to me like this is, you know, that's an enigma that I don't find anybody even bringing up, but it certainly resonates with me, and I suspect that others. What do you think about that?
Well, I might have said this the last time when I spoke on your show, and it's my favorite quote of myself, if I may say so. I stated that the purest form of liberalism is when you turn against your own. The purest form of liberalism is when you turn against your own. I think that the government, in some way, are able to show that they are on guard, that they are watching out for everybody's best interest, but really at the expense of the innocent. It's like at the airport, that they'll let women who are wearing the hijabs, you know, through at one point, because they didn't want to subject them to any kind of insult. Yet they take seven-year-old little girls from Tennessee with their grandmother traveling to visit their aunt, and they'll subject them to it is just to prove it is the world upside down. And when you talk about the Jews, when you talk about the Jews fleeing Europe, which they are, and the amount of, you know, they're fleeing France, they're fleeing England, and a lot of people are completely in denial about this. In that they say, well, there's got to be other reasons why that's happening. No, it's because Muslims have made it so uncomfortable, and the governments see Islam, the governments of Europe see Islam as a political force. So they need the Muslims. They've reached a critical mass in these key European countries, and they blatantly say that we are going to take over Europe based on our population. So keep having children. The governments are paying for their children, subsidizing the children, and they're caught in this warp, this never-ending cycle, which is going to end ultimately in a very problematic situation. And I am afraid, my dear friend, that, you know, our own politics here, if we don't get a true patriot in office, and the likelihood of that happening isn't great when you're living in a entitlement society where all you got to do is promise people more support, more subsidies. They have the numbers. The economy is not healthy for many people. You've got many refugees, you have many people coming here who are going to be, you know, illegals, who are going to become legal. You have the Puerto Rico is going to become a new state, 13 million new people. It's a numbers game, and how Obama was able to cobble together his win was by appealing to special interest groups, and they sat around the table and says, how are we, you know, white Americans, male Americans, the Republicans got 70% of the vote, but when it came to women, it came to homosexuals, it came to minorities. Romney didn't have a chance because many of these groups have very special interests that Obama appealed to very specifically. So it's a numbers game, just like Islam has become a numbers game that we're losing in this country. And I think our political future, the political future of this country, which is this represents the future of the free world, the bastion of hope and promise. I didn't say change. I don't know. The prospects aren't very good. You know, my son is in uniform. He's going to be deployed in 3 months. And, you know, the question is what and who is he fighting for at this point? What is Afghanistan represent to this country when you're dealing with a country where the people you're trying to help are shooting American soldiers?
Yeah.
How do you send a son to war in the Middle East when the people you're trying to help or you think you're helping become your enemy? It's so complicated. So I'm very uncomfortable with the future.
Oh, I'll bet. Personally, I'm very grateful that Barack Obama is so corrupt. I believe that there isn't any agency in his administration that isn't corrupt, that has not done things that are unconstitutional and illegal. And my hope is that these things continue to be uncovered, and that he is, as a human being, so discredited that people will vote for a true patriot. That's my hope, personally. That's what
my hope as well. But I fear that in the world of information, the information age that we're in, and because we've witnessed, you know, we discussed how people are willing to be deluded. They want to be lied to. They want to hear good news. They want to like somebody. You know, I met this woman years and years ago who attended as a child a rally for Adolf Hitler. She was with her mother. And I said, what was that like? She said, well, it was a very, very strange, because there we were in this big square, and everybody is raising their arm in unison, Hail Hitler, Hail Hitler, Hail Hitler. And I turned to my mother, she told me, and I asked my mother, why are we doing this? And the mother says, I don't know. I don't know. Think about it. You know, you're an enlightened being. You're a man who is in search of the truth. And I'm sure the people who listen to your show are the same. But are there enough of us? You know, are there enough people who really are in pursuit of the truth and will stand by the truth no matter what? It's an easy way to live, I think. I mean, it's the only way to live. Because if you're lying to yourself or allow yourself to be led down, led astray because it feels good, then you're not contributing anything to society. You're a burden. And I think that that when you start talking about entitlements, there are many people who are not able to make a clear judgment about who's running this country. If Hillary runs, you know, if Hillary runs, I mean, look at this guy in New York. What's happening in New York? You have Elliot Spitzer, who is a disgraced fellow who cheated on his wife and with prostitutes.
Oh, Wiener.
No, and then you have Wiener, who is sending these terrible pictures of himself, and he's a man. Wiener, there was an article in the New York Times of all places talking about his record and as a senator. He had the highest turnover staff than any other congressman, because people couldn't stand the guy. He was so difficult. And the weirdest thing was, they were talking about how his driver, he would tell his driver of his car that he has to go through every yellow light, and if he missed if he didn't get the yellow light, you know, and somebody beat him through the thing, he would go crazy. Now the New Yorkers are probably going to vote this guy in again, because what do they like about him? He's aggressive, he speaks well, but they don't care about his character. How could you possibly allow somebody like that to be mayor of New York? Somebody who has absolutely no character. He's a liar. He's a disgraced human being, and yet they'll vote him in again, because he has certain characteristics that they admire as a leader. Well, that's how you get bad leadership. You're voting on the trappings, his appearance, his way of speaking, his style of speaking. So that's what concerns me, is that our fellow citizens in this country, based on their voting record, are not able to make a good decision. You know, even when the facts are presented to them, Jack. So you say you hope that all these things are gonna come out about Obama. I don't know how much people are gonna be affected by it. You know, people are gonna vote issues.
That's a good question. You know, do you think part of it is because of our generation, that character counts, and it always counted. It counted when we were young. It counted when we had leadership like Eisenhower and Kennedy. And when Nixon got in there, it counted that he didn't have it. When Carter got in there and lied about who he was, it counted. When Reagan came in, it counted that he was a man of character. But it just seems like things have trailed off. People just don't know who they are anymore. It's a very sad situation with that. That is for sure. Well, listen, we are sadly out of time, and I want to thank you for talking about this. I do believe that the character issue of Barack Obama and those around him is going to be the thing that will be his downfall, if it happens, and if people will persevere and get to the truth of the matter. But we don't know. And, you know, in all of this, our concern for Israel is great. So,
well, I think it comes down to self-interest. And if people begin to realize that in the long term, their self-interest is to find leadership that has high values and have a narrative that makes sense to any sentient human being, then we have a chance. But other people's interests are very narrow and very selfish.
That's true. And let me just say thanks again, Rich, and we will talk again. And God
okay,
bless
my friend.
You,
a pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
United States of America. Bye-bye.
Okay. God bless you. Bye-bye.